SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well. And a Wednesday morning that finally around here after, I don't know how long, but once again up at a ridiculous hour and enjoyed handicapping Indiana's pick five today. Enjoyed handicapping it to the sound of authentic, not a thunderstorm, but a first summer rain, and certainly welcome, frankly, here in upstate New York, because the sooner that corn gets tall, the happier we'll all be. The best corn, they can say what they want in the Midwest. Around here, upstate New York, you got the best corn anywhere, and Pat Kelly he'll confirm it. Pat and his dad, their barn at Saratoga, where their house, they would bring bushels of corn out of this world. So looking forward to it. I you always jump the gun. You know, every so often I'm I will riff on produce. You know, you wait so long, and so the first corn comes up from Florida, and you know, you see it there, you know, in the grocery store, and you're like, oh, the corn, and you bring it home, and it's just not. It's, you know, once in a while, it'll be all right. Early season, you know, May. The first corn comes up from Florida about May, early June, and it's just not, no good. And plus, sometimes you go to touch it, and you can tell it's been refrigerated. It's been in the cooler. Let's get there. The strawberries are out around here, so we can't have them in the house because Tina's allergic to strawberries. Yeah, so got to have the EpiPen. Every so often, I'll buy something that's got strawberry in it, and Tina's like, "Are you trying to kill me?" "No, honey." I don't know why I'm in this frame of mind. The morning brings, we'll have a conversation with Judy Wagner, which I'm looking forward to. Judy, it's been ages since we've had Judy visit. And, you know, Wednesdays has become NHC qualifier conversation day. And we've had some really fun ones. But for Judy, he's a Hall of Famer. There's not a lot left for Judy Wagner to accomplish on the contest side, but she actually has been, you know, had kind of pared back a little bit and hadn't been really focused, and she's back at it. And I think she's been absent for 3 years, maybe even four. And it's the first time that she's qualified, I think, since her husband passed. So we're going to talk to Judy, not just about getting, you know, kind of back into the frame of mind that you need to compete, but also her role in the mentoring program. And she's one of the, you know, really appreciated and sought after mentors that's become a successful assistance to fledgling contest players. So Judy Wagner today, and I'll probably also float to Judy a little bit of her role as a regulator too. She's been, you know, the Louisiana Racing Commission. That's got to be just a load of fun. There's plenty of hijinks down in the bayou. She's had roles, on a lot of steering type committees and RCI, Racing Commissioners International. I don't think there's anything that Judy Wagner hasn't participated in. Just a generous and just adored uniformly. So a Judy Wagner visit today. Sid Fernando, of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Looking forward to Sid's thought about some of the international results, and I'm going to ask him about Kodiak, as promised. That's the craziest thing I've ever seen. Three winners from one stallion like that, and then on Saturday, and maybe I'll ask him about that Night of Thunder too that came up with Nick Luck, and of course, you know, 'tis the law conversation, and it was pretty much, you know, when it came to the weekend and it came to the domestic stallion successes, it's a lot of, you know, familiar names. Although we could touch on, actually, there are a couple of things that certainly Violence's star rising again for Hill and Dale, and the first Grade One winner in North America for Violence when it came to No Parole. Speaking Louisiana, Louisiana breads. Amos, in fact, that gets me thinking about Amos. And Amos swept the late double, at least the thoroughbred late double, at Indiana yesterday. And when we talk about that pick five, I'll, in fact, I'm going to do that right now since we went in this direction. Seth Merrill later, too, and I think Bill Downs is going to join us for the first of his visits this summer from Indiana. But you remember yesterday, I mentioned that pick five at Indiana, those three maiden races, and I thought that, boy, there's just a little too much mystery involved here. And I backed off, and I had the PPs for yesterday, and I have the PPs for today, and I've already written it up. It's at Derby Trail, and I'll transfer it over to the At the Races website. And I think it's very approachable today. It's a good card today at Indiana. And not that yesterday wasn't. But sure enough, I'm glad I stayed away, because there was a 50-1 shot that won that third leg, the third maiden special. This was the other Indiana bred maiden special weight, and I don't know. I don't know what. It's a wire job. That'll happen, right? Well, 52-1, Rodney Prescott for Joe Davis on a strong mandate colt, Idea Man, and that makes me think of the Hudsucker Proxy. The John Mahoney as the editor. Idea Man. For kids. Prescott took over on this second longest shot on the board. There was a 60-1 first-time starter, but 50-1 and basically led him on a merry chase. The 3-2 favorite, Flying Samurai, Manny Esquivel. I think Esquivel, you know, who was basically with him, you know, early through the race. They went a mile, and I think Esquivel thought that he could just take him at any time, and that was not the case. And Idea Man, you know, ended up pulling away late, and you know, mundane splits, and you know, you let a horse lope along. 50-1 or not. So, homebred for Fred and Neil McCrary. Strong mandate out of a Will's Way mare, 52-1, and a 30-1 morning line. And the rest of the prices, 2-1, 5-2, 1-2, and 1-5. It paid $1,844. Amazing. They did just under $2 million again at Indiana, and the business at Indiana has been very good, as Marcus Hirsch mentioned yesterday. And it was Amos that swept that late thoroughbred double, and you know, the eighth race came off the turf. So Treasure Trove drew in and, you know, looked the best on paper and was the best on the track. And then Nod to Persia at 1-5. Unbelievable. $1,844. There was 67,000 in the pool and just the 11.99% takeout. So it continues to be well worth looking at. And I'll go through the sequence in a little bit, because it's a very bettable, whether you're a pick five player or not. It's the card worth looking at. And as Marcus discussed yesterday, the field size remains, you know, robust. And as Eric Hallstrom told you, there's more where that came from. It's opening day at Emerald, and we're hoping that Phil Ziegler will join us late in the show. And Emerald gets started at 5:20 Eastern Time, 2:20 Pacific. They've got a 10-race card. Closes out with the Washington Breds. A couple of Washington Bred events on the card. The feature, a first-level allowance. Nice field of 11. Going six. And they've got nice, solid field size getting going. 11, 7, 6, 9, 8, 8, 8, 8, 11, 11. In terms of opening day at Emerald. Got to mention, and I wasn't able to reach the principal involved. I know Dr. Gorham, and I do want to ask him, you know, you had that crazy situation at Thistledown yesterday in the opener, where it seems as if it sounds like the racing office may have reported, you know, may have either, you know, not heard it right, but on many outlets, on Equibase, and Equibase is investigating too, Dr. Gorham had an entry charged with intent and swift punch, and Jock was double named Polaris, and so, you know, one of them was going to scratch, and assuming that the rules are the same in New York, you know, some places you can double name a rider and stay in the race with the other. In New York, if you double name, one of them's coming out. And so Equibase widely reported and disseminated that charged with intent was scratching and swift punch was running. And it was the other way around. It was swift punch that was coming out and charged with intent that was going to run and subsequently was a winner. Went off at about 8-1. And if you look at it, actually, I don't know. I mean, they both. I got the. There it is. There's the chart. Charged with intent was making a seasonal debut. 4-year-old Deputy Storm Gelding, an Indiana bred, actually. Last seen at Mahoning. I mean, and I I don't know. Well, just looking, Swift Punch had run in February and had run in June. Nickel Claimers, Charged with Intent, Nickel Claimers, when last seen. So, I don't know. Anyway, doesn't matter. They're going to look into it. But I guess in some places it was properly reported as well. So it's a weird, not the first time this has happened either. But I'm, we'll see what they come up with. Let's take a first break. Judy Wagner, looking forward to getting Judy. I mean, I talked to her in person plenty of times in recent years, but first time on the show in ages. Judy Wagner kicks us off.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow. What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back, and as we wait for Judy to connect, a couple of notes. The sale yesterday, I was keeping my eye on it, and I think from what I can tell, they seem happy at Keeneland with the, you know, with the first round of digital sales ring, as they're calling it, and Vinny Viola, St. Elias, took down Trapezium, the hard-spun three-year-old filly, and paid $327,000. And I thought it was also notable, that part of the Judmont consignment we mentioned yesterday. And Viola, paying that kind of money, this is Tussaud, the family of Tussaud, and so you're getting, and whatever she's going to do on the racetrack, if that's Viola's, if he's going to go on with her, but clearly she'll end up, as a prominent broodmare for Viola, who is getting, bigger in that arena. There's quite a few. It wasn't a big offering. There was only, as we said, there was only three dozen in the sale, and there's quite a few RNAs that came back, so you can still peruse. But it was kind of cool. I just watching the way it literally was like eBay for to pick off a racehorse. I'll also mention, and Judy's joining us, Governor Morris with a bout of colitis. And so he's sidelined for probably 60 days. So no bluegrass for Governor Morris. And, this kind of fits that dialogue from the last few weeks leading into Belmont Day. If they're right, if they're doing okay, and there's an opportunity, you run them, because here's a perfect example of a horse that, I don't know, he might have gotten sick last week and not been able to run anyway, but you get the point. That's why Mark Cassie and Patrick Biancone, they ran their horses. They're doing okay, and here's a big opportunity, and you run. Big opportunity to talk to Judy Wagner, Hall of Famer, industry legend in so many different capacities, and it's a pleasure to congratulate Judy on getting back to the NHC. Judy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I hope you're well.
I am, and you told me yesterday that you were away from from home, away from New Orleans, and you're just getting back. Explain how you had to spend the winter, of course, with the pandemic holding everybody at bay.
Well, to be honest with you, we had a great Mardi Gras. I had grandchildren here. Did not even think of pandemic. The 13th of March, walking across the street to my office, the streets were almost deserted. It was like the hurricane was in the mouth of the Mississippi River and everybody was hunkered down. I get to my office and, have you been here? Have you, all the typical things that we're going through now. Then I get a call from a mutual friend of ours is in intensive care with the virus. Make a long story short, I had a meltdown. Everything going, my first real crisis without Brian. So I decided I was going to Atlanta. I have children and grandchildren there, and we have a small home there. So I went to Atlanta on the 13th of March and just came back to New Orleans yesterday. So, the whole thing has turned everybody's life upside down. But I do believe that it's not going away anytime soon, and we just have to make the adjustments and get our life going forward and learning how to live with it.
That seems to be, good advice and good direction. And, you mentioned, addressing a crisis for the first time since Brian's passing. And, that's part of the story, Judy, for you, kind of getting back into the swing of things on the contest front, too, because, even though you've come out to Vegas to be on hand, you haven't been competing, but you're officially back.
Well, I hope that's the case. I tried. I didn't give the attempt that I should have last year, and it just wasn't meant to be, but I have so many wonderful friends, so many connections to Vegas. I did go out, for the contest last year, but I'm looking forward to it. I was very happy to get this monkey off my back that I could get back to Vegas. So, I'm thrilled about it.
Has anything changed? Did you have to kind of reorient, or did you have to, catch up? How much time were you spending even being in tune with, with racing? And of course, it was an unusual situation in terms of how much racing there was, and we're back, in literal full swing. And I'm curious how you waded back into the action.
Well, to be honest with you, I've been very in tune with racing since all of this started. I'm a member of the Louisiana Racing Commission.
Right.
And we have four tracks that are all owned by casino companies, Churchill Downs, Boyd Gaming, and Harrah's. Well, to face the crisis of one of the companies that owns two of the tracks, ordered all of their people off the backside within a very short window of time, 48, 72 hours, whatever, and dealing with that, because that took, commission orders, then, the casino company going for legal relief through a temporary restraining order, a lot of that back and forth. I think if I never have another conference call with 100 people on it, or a Zoom call related to racing regulations, I can survive for a while because I have been very busy with that. That really restricted my time as far as devoting to handicapping. I was trying to come up with some new approaches, and, I didn't manage my time well enough to get a new plan. I went back to my old tried and true, and it worked. So I have been in contact, and being on the NTRA board, also, we had issues, and I must say they were unbelievable as far as the guidance for even our commission is with the regulations, stipulations, guidelines for getting the track closed, reopened, because now we do have, tracks that have reopened.
I was certainly going to talk to you about your Louisiana responsibilities, and since it came right up, maybe we'll table contest for a minute and flesh that out. There was some real frustration back in March and April with Boyd, and frankly, there's been quite a bit of frustration with Boyd on several topics, including shielding horses coming off the track from harm. How has the commission, Judy, tried to hold feet to the fire, as it were, and in fact, successfully held Churchill to some higher standards when it came to fairgrounds a couple of years ago. That's been very productive, actually. That I think everybody's satisfied with the way that turned out. But talk a little bit about your involvement and what kind of satisfaction there is in getting things accomplished on that front, as a from the administrative side and as a legend, as a regulator.
Well, obviously there were some very strained times trying to get everybody on the same page, because we also have to recognize that the horsemen have a huge say in, what's going on. Sadly, many people don't realize that you can't all of a sudden give somebody 48 hours to be completely off the backside. You have people that have no other home than the backside. They go from track to track. It took a lot of give and take. At times, people felt like they were given more than they were taking, vice versa, whatever. It was a tough situation, and we all know that in Louisiana, to have the casinos open and money in the machines, you have to have horse racing. And, you know, at times there is a little bit of a frustrating feeling when you're trying to work these things out that is forgotten, that you have to support racing because you've got the casino there because of racing. I will say that finally we did have an agreement. Nothing is perfect. There are some, you know, at times there are people that find it difficult to make a compromise. And I think the perception is that casino companies are very, very healthy cash-wise, financial-wise, and that's not always necessarily the case. I understand that they need people playing in the casinos to be able to support purses, blah, 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 this kind of stuff. But we're all in this together. It's not like, you know, 80% of the people can suffer all the consequences from, you know, the pandemic, and, you know, I'll just decide to remove myself from it. It just doesn't work that way. There were some issues with, although the purses were somewhat reduced in Oakland, you know, Oakland is an extremely attractive meet from the purse standpoint. And, you know, the issues with a horse leaving, the majority of them leaving fairgrounds to go up to Oakland to run and then not being able to come back in. There were so many moving parts. And then you can put in every enforcement in the world, the temperature checks, the, you know, the health questionnaires, all that kind of stuff. But then if you don't have anybody to enforce it, you know, what is going to be accomplished in a positive way? There were just a lot of moving parts constantly. And to be honest with you, there still are moving parts. Mm. But I'm telling you, I feel like that racing, we've had a golden opportunity with, you know, our pod, Bonner Park, the new chairman of RCI is executive director of the Nebraska Commission, Tom Sage, who's a very capable person. And, you know, people got introduced to Bonner Park. People got introduced to Will Rogers Downs because for a while that was pretty much the only show in town. And we know that so much of the wagering dollars goes, you know, it's off-track betting. Now, Bonner didn't have as sweet a deal as some places do, but still, you know, it's just, it's a constant moving target, but you have to stay on top of it all the time. And I think if we just step back and realize what we all want is the health of the industry. We want safe horses. We want safe riders. And so that in a little bit of a nutshell is what I've been dealing with a good bit. And, you know, the NTRA issues, they've had to, you know, have people working from home. But I will say, you know, of course I'm very partial, but I think they've done a fabulous job of staying on course, managing, you know, what they have to manage and showing such a strong leadership role as far as guidelines. And our attorney for the Louisiana Commission has used so much of the information, the documents that have been put together by the NTRA as far as guiding us on some of our restrictions for tracks to open back up. And also, we need to capitalize on, especially with the uncertainty of the NFL, it looks like baseball may come back for an abbreviated season, but, you know, horse racing has a great opportunity right now, you know, for people that enjoy wagering, whether you're a, you know, a professional gambler or whether you are a casual player that is longing for, as my 19-year-old grandson says, sadly, some action.
You know? Exactly. Judy Wagner's with us, and Judy, a NHC Hall of Famer and works in so many capacities, has contributed in so many ways to industry oversight, regulation, you know, building consensus. And Judy, one of the other aspects as part of your commitment, particularly to, you know, the NHC right from the beginning, the mentoring program. And I wanted to make sure, you know, having you visit, that we discuss the mentoring program. And it's been a great success, because it's not easy. You know, we've had a couple of young players the last 2 weeks visiting, and, you know, people that come into, you know, the contest landscape, it isn't, you know, you don't grasp it overnight. And the mentoring program has really been a quiet success.
It has, and I wish that I had more time to devote to it, but I am so proud of a couple of people that I have mentored. Several years ago, a gentleman qualified for NHC for the first time and wanted a mentor to navigate just literally coming to Las Vegas. What do you do when you get there? I have become good friends with him. Of course, we're friends in cyberspace, but, you know, we have connected at Keeneland contest or whatever, and it's been a great, you know, not only has it benefited both of us from the handicapping standpoint, but just building, you know, friendships. I had someone this past Friday on this family and friends team that sponsored the feeders for the weekend qualifiers. I had a first-time contest player, and, the family and friends tournament on Friday are pick and pray. Well, he finished at the top of the list. He won an entry for the weekend. Well, it was my fault. I didn't realize it, but the weekend contest was live. Well, on his Friday contest, I think he hit the first three races. So on the weekend contest with the live one, he missed the first three races. I get a text from him, Judy, this is not like Friday. This is not what you told me it was going to be. This is hard. I said, well, I am sorry that I didn't realize, but you have to change your strategy completely. But it has been something that has been, I think it is fabulous for anybody to take advantage of the mentoring program. You don't have to, the perception of humiliating yourself, being embarrassed because you don't do well in a contest. You can hide behind the computer. Nobody sees you. Nobody knows. But get your feet wet, and you can have a constant dialogue with the mentor, you know, online or whatever. I think that you made a very accurate statement about it being kind of a quiet program, but it is a very successful program, and I hope that it continues going forward, and I hope we get more mentors that will be willing to pick up the ball and run with it, as far as just giving that little extra reassurance to new contest players.
Well, and when you look, when you go to the section at the NTRA website and the NHC subsection, the mentoring list, the, you know, the individuals that contribute their time to it are just among the most successful players and the most consistent participants that get to Vegas every year, including our friend Paul Weiser and Chris Larmy, Jonathan Kinchin, and Trey Stiles, Paul Sherman. I mean, these are all, you know, veteran players. Scott Carson and Monty Engler, Ellen Patrick does it. Ray Arsenault is involved in the mentor program. Dennis DeCower, who's been winning, it seems like every week I see DeCower has won another. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. He had a bummer of a contest about a month ago. But going, you mentioned Ellen Patrick. Ellen is someone that I met at a contest at Louisiana Dance probably 5 or 6 years ago. She was sitting at a table next to me, and we chatted briefly. got ready to leave. At that time, the company she was working for, I think she was compliance officer or something, but she is a food service company and a very nice restaurant chain, and she gave me a gift card. And I was in Houston for some medical checkups, and I went to the restaurant. Fabulous meal. That sitting next to her at the LAD contest, me contacting her to say thank you, has developed a friendship. She and I went out to Hell's Kitchen to eat this year and in Vegas. We sat at, you know, the same table. We've maintained communications constantly, and I'm thrilled because she is an excellent person for a mentor also. And her day is going to come where you'll see her name more and more.
I love it. Well, all the participants from that front on the, and you can request, you can essentially, you know, for those that are hearing this maybe for the first time, it's one of the reasons I reached out to Judy. If you haven't seen this, I'll put the link up and you can go right to the board and right to the website and you can request. I mean, if a mentor isn't booked up and already, you know, tied on with, you know, with the mentorees, and as Judy explained, you know, her dance card awfully full. Judy, talk a little bit about the landscape and the way, you know, you've seen it change, and from, you know, the origin, actually, because, you know, you and Brian, you know, you were involved from early on, and in fact, I'm even curious, you know, what caught your interest, and, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, the early days of the contest scene and, you know, what intrigued you guys about it and how you've seen it change over the years.
Well, the first year, 2000, when Steve Walker won NXT, Brian and I basically knew nothing about NXT. Well, that after the first NXT, Brian was very involved in politics, and we were big supporters of John McCain. We were friends with John McCain, and when Bush was the anointed son to get the nomination, John McCain was fighting for the nomination also, but it came quite apparent that Bush would have the nomination, and McCain dropped out. Brian was just so devastated because we really had such respect and admired him as a person, and he'd been in our home numerous times, and Brian was just devastated and over his withdrawal. But Brian said, you know, Judy, I'm just, Brian has always loved politics when he was a little kid. His first political venture was he organized this group called Bike for Ike when Dwight Eisenhower was running for president. So Brian has had a long love for politics. Anyway, after McCain withdrew, he said, I just want to do something different. I just want to get out of New Orleans. I don't want to even think about politics. And at that time, we had many more periodicals on horse racing, you know, Turf magazine, all the different horse player magazines. Well, there were numerous advertisements. And he said, there is this contest in Las Vegas at the MGM that I'd like to go to. I said, oh, that's great. That's great. I'll go with you. I said, you know, you can do the contest and I'll go do my thing. He said, no, you have to play in this contest. And I said, I'm not about to go to Las Vegas and sit in a room with probably a bunch of people with green visors and all that kind of stuff, you know, hooping and hollering. He said, nope, you have to play. So we go to the MGM for a qualifier, and at that time, all the contests they were all on site, and they gave four qualifying spots. Well, we go, and the entry fee was much more than normal for that period of time. I think the entry fee was $2,500, $3,000. It was before the, you know, the BCBC and, you know, contests like that. And I I'm pretty conservative financially, and Brian is on the other extreme. So anyway, we go to this contest, and I think I was the only female in the contest. I'm not sure, but I was so intimidated walking it back, because at that time it was in the sports book at MGM.
Right.
And there was this, I knew very few people in there. There was this group in there that was screaming and hollering and telling the jockeys what to do and what they didn't do and how bad they did it and the trainers and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I've never been around something like this. Make a long story short, the Bertolucci's won the contest and won about $125,000. I came in third, and I won, I think it was $21,600, which I thought was all the money in the world at that time, but I was thrilled to death. But I qualified. In the spring of 2000, I qualified for the contest in January of 2001. A few weeks later, Brian had business in D.C. We go the weekend before his business. There's a contest at Laurel. So at that time, you had to travel to the contest, and having a child and a daughter and son-in-law in D.C., we went up early. He played at Laurel, and trying to get Brian qualified because the bug bit us big time with the first trip out to MGM. And so that's what got us, you know, involved. Brian did not qualify the first year, but he had great success thereafter. And it became a real, real hobby that fortunately people at our age, oftentimes it's difficult to find a hobby that both have enthusiasm for. Well, we were
sure.
Very fortunate that we had this.
Wow, and of course, cement your place in contest lore and history with your win, and then you know subsequent visits and Hall of Fame status, and you know, great that you'll be, you know, you got at least one seat and plenty of time to get a second one by February of next year. Judy, talk about your handicapping method. There's always so many things that whenever you visit, there's always a handful of topics to throw at you, but I can't recall if we've ever really talked about the base of your handicapping approach and how that may have changed over the years and tools that you may have incorporated in as things have changed.
Well, when I first was introduced to horse racing in 1994 by Brian, we went to the racetrack. We both had been divorced for a while, and Brian has loved racing, crawled under the fence when he was too young to get in the front door, you know, that type thing. And he had owned horses, low-level claiming some allowance, but, you know, not the fancy horses. In 1994, when I met him, he had the best horse that he owned, had, and it had been on the Derby trail, but when it was the favorite or second favorite in the Arkansas Derby and did very poorly, they pulled him off. But he had an enthusiasm that he wanted to go to the races all the time. He takes me to the races, and the first time he buys, you know, he buys a program. And, you know, sitting at the races is not like an hour. It's all day long, practically. And you, by the time you eat and you look at the pictures in the program, you still have about 3 hours to go. So I figured I better figure out something to do. And so he started off, when we would go, every race he would give me $5 across the board on a horse. Well, if I came home with $20, I'd be thrilled. And, you know, it was I had no skin in the game as far as having to give up any of my fun. So he had a method to his madness, and he was very successful at it. But anyway, I found this page that had leading trainers and leading jockeys. So So I went through every race, and I'd mark 1, 2, 3. And, boy, if you had one that both of them were ones or both of them were twos, that's the horse I would bet. Bottom line is, Steve, I am very much a person that looks at statistics. People think that I know a lot more about horse racing than I do. I really don't know. I'm not good on pace. Obviously, I can look at a race using just regular PPs, whether it be from DRF or, the breath or whatever. I can look at a horse and tell you who's going to be the speed. I can do that. But as far as getting down into the fractions, but I would say that this is my favorite time of the year as far as racing, because I love first-time starters. I love to look at the pedigree and look at the workouts. And, you know, a hidden jewel for me is finding a trainer that is not a Chad Brown, not a Fletcher, you know, not the big-name trainers that have, you know, 58% success with first-time, you know, runners or whatever. I do use the handicapping software program, HTR, by Ken Massa out of California.
Sure.
It is a subscription, but I have used that for years because the statistics that are important to me are easily accessible in that program. So Ken and I have maintained a friendship, you know, through his program for several years. He always had a seminar in Las Vegas before one of their big summer contests. It'd be like a one-day seminar, and Brian and I would go to that. Generally, it would be on our way. We spent 19 summers in Del Mar for anywhere from 2 weeks to a month, 5 weeks or whatever, and we try to schedule it. If not, we would just go over for the day and go to his seminar. And I met some of the nicest people through, you know, just sitting in a room. I have always loved seminars. I think one of the first seminars I ever went to that really hooked me on seminars was probably 95, 96, 97, somewhere in that range. Brian and I went to Churchill Downs for Belmont weekend, and John Asher was doing a seminar at the Kentucky Derby Museum, and it was early that morning, and Brian was a late sleeper, but he was happy to get up and go with me. And John Asher had such a soft but yet convincing way of talking about picks, talking about why you look at this horse. I really, you know, we were all devastated to hear of his passing, but he was such a strong, strong influence on me going to handicapping seminars, and I did it at Del Mar many times when I was there. In fact, one summer they were having, although the name of it is deceiving, handicapping for women or something like that, but it was for anybody. But you had Lauren Stitch, that's back when she wrote the pedigree articles for DRF. You had Brad Freed. You had Kate Bradar, who I could listen to all day long when the horses come in the paddock and she says, that one's unhappy, you know, the tail swishing the wrong way. I just love her insight. But you know, it was intimidating when I was asked to be on a panel. In fact, there were five or six of us, and they'd start and go down the line. You had to, you know, back up while you picked your horse. I'll never forget, because I've heard this. In fact, just within the last month, somebody made a comment to me about this. There was a race that was on the turf. And you know how you kind of pick up things by osmosis? I had always heard people say, Frankel on the turf, Frankel on the turf, Frankel on the turf. Well, Frankel had a horse in that race. I had no reason to pick that horse other than Frankel on the turf. And I said that at the seminar, and people laughed at me. But it worked. The horse won.
I love it. You know, one area that I imagine, when you talk about first-time starters, and we've been spending time here these last few weeks with Indiana and Canterbury opening, the Minnesota breds, and you got to, you know, learn quickly about, you know, some regional sires and you know, win early sires. You know, you've got in Louisiana, you've got a program that, in fact, Tom Amos was on Monday celebrating No Paroles success.
Big win last week, probably. Maggie.
Absolutely. Exactly. And, you know, the understanding the Louisiana breds, and you know, when if you're looking at Delta and Evangeline and Louisiana Downs, and you know, the Louisiana bred program has been instrumental in, you know, the fairground season. Especially early on in November, December, as the meet gets started before some of the, you know, the bigger outfits come down from Kentucky and so forth. You got to learn a whole set of, you know, of trainers that are good with, you know, win early types, and there's a lot of success to be had in that.
Well, that is something that I love looking at. You know, in fact, was it last weekend? I forget which race it was. I believe at Belmont that a Louisiana bred, I forget who, was it Mark Cassie horse? I can't remember. But there was a pretty fancy race that a Louisiana bred won. And I'm just having a senior moment here trying to remember the horse in the race. But anyway, that is an angle that so many people don't want to even look at a race when you have first-time starters or either runners that have only had one race. But I love seeing the runners that only have one race, and maybe they were slow out of the gate, maybe they were fractured, you know, whatever. There's just, to me, that the level that I bet, which I am not a big bettor, I'm a serious handicapper, but I'm not a big bettor, that's where I can find my value for what I, you know, invest with my wagering dollars.
Judy Wagner has been with us, and Judy, before we go, just a general plug for the contest scene, and you know, you mentioned we talked about, you know, some of the mentors involved, and when you mentioned Ellen Patrick, you know, the women to get more female players. You know, I know there's been, you mentioned, you know, the handicapping for women, and you talk about Caton, and I know Donna Brothers wrote a book that, you know, was trying to you know, to get women to you know, get interested. Do you find that the, you know, the playing field and the, you know, the atmosphere has been better for, you know, for women, and has that improved? Are we doing enough to encourage, you know, women to get involved in play?
Okay, yes, it has improved tremendously. I would not say emphatically that enough has been done to make women feel welcome. I think that the intimidation factor, contests have really, really skyrocketed in popularity. Sadly, you know, that has not been the case with all aspects of racing. But with the saturation of the original group, now we're seeing an expansion, I believe. I don't have any statistics in front of me, but I think that whether you're female or male, I think the contest has gotten to the level where it is a little bit intimidating. But going back to the mentoring program, I have someone that I'm mentoring now that is an excellent handicapper. In fact, she is much stronger than I am. But I told her the other day, I said, you've got too much knowledge. You've got to pick the things that mean the most to you and zero in on that, not go and look for a reason to not bet the horse because of this statistic or whatever. But she's trying to get to the NHC for the first time. And it's by the mentoring program, it's almost you can do it in a private, protected way that you don't have to expose yourself if, you know, not finishing at the top of the leaderboard or whatever is something that bothers you. Because the very first thing I tell people, you know, don't worry if you finish at zero. I will send you copies of leaderboards where I was at zero. And
sure.
So that is something that you just have to believe in yourself. And with handicapping and horse racing, everybody has good days, bad days, good spells, bad spells. Scott Carson asked me about being on his podcast 6 or 8 months ago, and I said, absolutely not. I'm in such a dump as far as my handicapping is concerned. But, yeah, just dig your heels in and keep going. But I do think there are opportunities for women. I just wish that we could get more. And, you know, you've seen guys that have significant others, wives, whatever, that they encourage, that you're seeing that a little bit more than you used to. The stage is there. They just need to jump on it.
Well, Judy Wagner has graced the stage for the presentation of a Eclipse Award and as a Hall of Famer and an NHC champion. And Judy, as always, a pleasure to chat and to congratulate you on another qualification and at least one seat in Vegas and probably a second between now and February. Continued success. Stay healthy, and we'll look forward to seeing you somewhere along the line. We have crossed paths at the racetracks over the years, and if I don't see you until Vegas, that's fine too.
Well, I look forward to wherever our paths cross, I look forward to them crossing. And thank you so much.
Judy Wagner, an absolute legend. And the dedication to not just the contest world, but to the industry at large. The time she has spent, I mean, it's probably 15 years she's been involved in the regulations side of the game as a member of the commission and also RCI, which, you know, is an added obligation, and you know, this all takes a lot of time, and she makes time for mentoring as well. So she's one of the most popular people. I have no point in saying woman around the game. She's one of the most valuable and appreciated around the game. Let's take a top of the hour break, and when we come back, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And looking forward to letting Sid riff on Tiz the Law, who he spent time with on Sunday morning. That's always one of the best atmospheres post big race wins, when you get to go to a barn. And I bet you if you talk to people, fans and media people and racetrack people, going to congratulate the barn after a win like the Belmont and being able to hang out, it's always special. And had a few Belmont winter experiences. Summer Bird was one, and an American Pharoah was one. Take a timeout. Hour two later, we're going to talk to Pete today. Waiting to hear. I'm hoping that we get to do a little Emerald bit, and we've got Indiana as well, Seth Merrow, and more. Hour two at the races. SiriusXM, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Developed by Horstman, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Step on side to side.
Is about 5 minutes into hour two on this Wednesday. Rabbit Hole, Jim Cook and Camel Fat, and Rabbit Hole, a good lead into pedigree conversations, because when you start to get into pedigree, it is a rabbit hole. You start digging and learning and broodmares and broodmare sires and stamina and influence and